things could drastically, dramatically change in an instant. So the reality is that is the way it is for everyone, everywhere. The only difference is it's very, there's no mask over life in the forest. Things are just very strikingly clear. So when this Shukadeva Goswami, he lives in the forest. He's not speaking theoretically. When it rains, he doesn't have to change his clothes because he doesn't wear any clothes. He's living a very, very simple life. It's not that you can cook when you're living in the forest. You can't. It's not like some forest grocery where you can select what you like to eat. Whatever happens to be there. Most of the herbs are quite bitter. Sometimes you get some sweet fruits. But whatever is there is your only choice. So in other words, really, the real free will you have on living to the forest is how much you're just going to wish you had all other things and suffer, or just turn to God and see what a blessing this is. We have a complete freedom of will, whether to be happy in the situation or this one. But happiness will not be on the material platform, because there's dangers lurking in every step. Sometimes when we live in the forest, depending on which forest, we hear the roar of a tiger or a leopard, and it sounds really close. Other times you may hear the howl of a wolf. And you don't have any knives or guns or bows or arrows. All you have is your faith in God. And that faith in God is not that the leopard will not eat me. That faith in God is, whatever you want, Krishna, I'm yours. Maruti rapo bicho icha tohane kita sapati tua adhikar. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying like this. You want to protect me? What can harm me? Who can harm me? And if you want to kill me, who can protect me? I'm yours. I'm your eternal servant. So when we speak about the forest of enjoyment, which is the title of this chapter, it means a place where there's danger at every step, a place where you're totally vulnerable, and yet you're trying to enjoy. And that enjoyment is so subjected to unlimited conditions. And really what Sukadeva Goswami is describing is how the entire world in this sense is like a forest. But unfortunately, in our modern lives, with all our technologies and all of our conveniences and conveyances and everything else, we forget. Padam padam yakti padam lakesha. But there actually is danger in us, whoever we are. It's not a question of how old we are, or how much money we have, or how much power we have, or how beautiful or handsome we are, or how strong our physical body is, or how intellectually advanced our thinking is, Swami just roaming around the world, you really see what it's like in this forest. See people are living in massively incredible palaces, gold plate and gold leaf on everything. Three people living in places that have 150 rooms. Or little people living in a tiny one room straw hut with some clay on the floor. People who have several PhDs, great scientists. Or people who are, can't even spell their name. You know, they can't pronounce by looking even one letter of an alphabet. Sometimes we see glamorous, famous people just going outside. They have to have all kinds of people around them because the kind of people just, oh, there she is. Speaking to one well-known man in California recently, he was in the room and he was just asking questions about all the problems in his life. He's asking me. He's famous. I know that he knows who I am, except maybe a few devotees. And I don't have any money. It's unbelievable. And then we go outside and late at night, and a car goes by, and all these girls are going, and then he gets in his car, and then he's driving, and some girls are on the side of the road, and they look at him. Literally, I couldn't believe it. It was like the whole group of these, I guess they were in the mid-20s, they were jumping up and down and screaming and calling their friends. I saw this person, my God. Whether we're famous or whether nobody knows who we are, there's not much difference. Because Padam Padamrati Padam Padam, the same vulnerability is for all of us. Even if we have massive armies around to protect us, it doesn't make that much difference. And you could be conquering lands and have 10 million soldiers in a circle around you to protect you from enemies. And then a land mosquito bites you and gives you malaria and you die. That's the way the zero nation happens. Just like that, actually. Explains Abrama Guna Loka Puna Rabata Mojana Mamudeti the Homer of Puna Jana. The highest planet, Brahma Loka, Tipatala Loka, they're all places. They were just inevitable. And Srila Prabhupada explains in this purport, people don't like to talk about this so much. Because they want to be optimistic. Most people just surrender to being pessimistic. A lot of people want to be optimistic. Let's just talk about the joys and the pleasures and the happiness of this world. But the reality is, things could change in a moment. There's just so much there beyond our control. The economy can change. All over the world, it's unbelievable. In my traveling home, many people are devastated because the economy people who lose their jobs, they lose their money, they lose their health, they lose everything. There's nothing left. Disease, even some of the most powerful controllers of this planet, they get cancer. They suffer miserably until death. Those simple villagers who are just playing cricket, they're healthy, they're very nice, happy, soccer, everything you say. And you know, these very powerful people just hardly in the form, he's looking out the window saying, I wish I could be like that. So what is reality? A couple of days ago, I was speaking in England with a very powerful government leader. And he was asking me, why did God, if there is a God, why did he make things like this? I mean, he could have done a better job. Nobody's exempt. Why? You know, why can't we just, okay, you know, God, I'm yours, and then everything becomes nice. Sometimes devotees, you know, we think that now I'm sincerely endeavoring to show my gratitude, my love, and devotion to Krishna. So since he's the controller of all controllers, he should make the whole material world such an enjoyable place for me. Why am I going through the same thing as the people who don't believe at all are going through? He was asking these kinds of questions. Have any of you ever thought like this?
Yes.
Sometimes we think when I take to the path of devotion, everything will be alright. And actually, everything is alright. But just not the way you may specifically desire it to be. Because the world is the world. Whether you're a devotee or not a devotee, whether you're rich or poor, whether you're educated or uneducated, whether you're black or white or red or yellow or brown, or whether you're a Hindu or a Muslim or an atheist, or a Christian or a Jew or an agnostic or an animal or a bird or a fish or an insect, everything's simpler. Everything is uncertain. This day and age, you know, the governments that are supposed to be protecting us are often oppressive, depressive, and the source of our miseries. It's been like that since the beginning of time. Hiranyakashipu is like the president of the universe. He doesn't make people happy. You know, in Europe, you've had so many rulers who have been oppressive to the innocent. And those who follow him, they give them great rewards, but then in the end, the ruler and all the followers suffer. So this is the way history has always been. When we actually turn to Krishna, we shouldn't expect that now our material life will be so annoying. Now my wishes will be fulfilled. When we turn to Krishna, we get shelter. We can transcend and realize the pure truth, the eternal existence beyond this ever-changing. The Bible says to be in this world but not of this world. That's the case. We could be in this happy in this world. But the way to really be happy in this world is not to be of this world. Does that make sense? It doesn't make sense. Because it's inconceivable. But it's at the same time conceivable. While it's inconceivable. This is how Krishna works. In this world, but not of this world, is talking about not the environment around us, our conscious perception. If we're seeing something as mine, or something I long to be mine, janasya mohom yamaham mameti. This is the core principle of bondage, is I and mine. George Harrison heard this from Prabhupada. He was a realized soul in many ways. He was as famous as anybody could be. He was fabulously wealthy. He was young. He was handsome. He had a beautiful wife. He had incredible artistic skill. What more could you want? Yeah, Prabhupada taught him that all these things are not going to make us happy. And you know something? He was more miserable than he ever was when he had nothing. And he wanted to find something beyond it. Srila Prabhupada was explaining. You know the song, I, Me, Mine. But this is all we talk about. This is all we think about. This is all we live for. It's I, Me, Mine. I, Me, Mine. I am this body. I am American. I am European. I am Indian. I am whatever, male or female. And I am... And this is me. My skills, my intelligence. And whatever... is under my temporary control is mine. And because of this concept, we become extremely depressed when we don't get what we want. We have a tendency to become very arrogant and proud and think ourselves better than others, condescending when we have something more. But people are so crazy. The nature of envy, if you don't have it and somebody does have it, you envy them. And if you have it and somebody else doesn't have it, then you become arrogant. So either way, envy and arrogance are like burning fire that causes so much anxiety. Prabhupada explained, you know, here you are, you have everything. For real. But it's all based on this I, Me, and Mine. But if you turn to Krishna and you see everything belongs to Krishna, then you can be happy. In the fifth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, there is the peace formula. Bhaktaram jatatapasara sarvalokamaheshwaram surhutam sarvahutamam yatramam shanti krishna. If you want to be happy, if you want to be peaceful, this is what's required. This is recognized that Krishna is the Prabhupada. That everything is ultimately not meant for my enjoyment, but for God's enjoyment. And that Krishna is the best, most intimate, loving, well-wishing friend of everyone. So you see, this person will ask, why did God make things like this? Some things we just have to accept. That if Krishna can create the entire cosmic manifestation, then he must know the best way for it to work.
For the overall master plan of the deliverance of the
spirit soul, the jiva. We're seeing from the perspective of my little petty attachments and my little petty temporary tiny little eternal souls going through some difficulties. So we're thinking the whole creation should be different because of this. But Krishna knows we're all his children. It's like if somebody's child is a drug addict. I really hope that doesn't happen to you. But if you have a child who is a staunch drug addict, is it better? Do you wish better for him that he actually enjoys that life? Or do you want him to really suffer and get down to the rock bottom so he'll give up his habit and then live a healthy life? Which is better? To just keep enjoying being a drug addict? I was recently at an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. Well, believe it or not, I was never an alcoholic. I was invited to go there. And how many of you have been? If you don't mind, raise your hand. Anyways, if you really want to hear about miserable situations, that's the place to go. Really, the force of enjoyment in this chapter. It's like reading this chapter. These people, they talk about all the miseries that they experienced and all the suffering they inflicted to other people. It's ghastly. And there were some very famous people there, some top rock and roll musicians, multi-millionaires. They're just talking about how they suffer and how they caused their parents to suffer. Their wives and husbands to suffer, their children to suffer, their grandparents to suffer, their neighbors to suffer. They just talk and they go into very, very ghastly details. And everybody's listening. They rapt attention. And ultimately, we need each other. Because somehow or other, because of our association together, we turn to the higher power of God, and now we're all right. But we know, without each other, without constantly turning to that higher power of God, we're going to fall back into it. They've seen it. And it's interesting, all of them that were there, they all agree that all that suffering is a blessing. It was a blessing because they would have never seriously turned to God otherwise. So those particular people. But people in this world are like addicted to the illusion of the bodily concept, material enjoyment is the all in all. We're eternal souls. We're such an anatta, full of knowledge, full of bliss. We have an eternal relationship with the all-beautiful Krishna. And we forgot. And this creation is a place where we can try to enjoy separate from who we really are and who we really love. But it's created in such a way that you're not going to be satisfied. If we were satisfied, we would never turn to God. We would never awaken the eternal nature of the soul. We would remain in this and it really shows it can happen to anyone at any time. This forest of enjoyment chapter is being spoken to English. We should go deep into these subjects. We should go deep into the background of the subjects to really understand the lesson that's being taught. Who are we compared to Parikshit Maharaj? As far as his birth, he was the grandson of Arjuna. His uncle was Yudhisthira Maharaj. His uncle was Krishna. His second uncle was Krishna. Pretty good birth, isn't it? It's amazing. And he was the emperor of the world. There is no one with such a position today. You can be a president or prime minister. But if the economy goes down or something, people don't like what's happening, then they vote you out. Yes. King Parikshit never had to go on a campaign for votes. He was born to be the king, and he would be king until he decided to just give it up on his own. And he was the king of the whole world after all. And he was young. Prior to his youth, he had a wonderful family, and everyone was well behaved. Can you imagine having children listen to you? That would be corruption. They all listen to you. Everything. He was wealth, and everyone loved him. It's one thing to make billions of dollars or euros or rupees or to have power and prestige and position, but actually be loved. That's something very rare. You can't find to actually be loved and respected and appreciated by people. It's a great accomplishment. The entire world loved, respected, and appreciated him. Because he treated everyone, even the animals, like his own children. Not to speak of all classes of humans. And even the miscreants, he would treat them like his own loving children and punish them to keep them from hurting the others. Everything he did was with compassion and love, and that's what people reciprocated. He did everything. And it was just a regular old day for Parikshit. He was just out in the forest, just roaming around, having a good time. And he happened to come to them. He got really thirsty. See, no matter whether you have a lot of money or no money, whether you're famous or nobody knows you, whether you're young or old, whether you're an atheist or a Vaishnava, you still get thirsty. There's certain common denominators that really just level off our different variations. We get hungry, we get thirsty, we have human emotions. So he was thirsty. We went to some degree, she a great sage, and asked for water. And the sage was in meditation. He was so absorbed in his meditation that he couldn't hear or even recognize anything around him. You know, when we chant japa, you know, a fly is going to move and sometimes. This person was really in meditation. He was meditating on the Lord, and the king came into his house and said, "Give me water, please." He didn't hear. He didn't know what was there. He was in samadhi. He was just vulnerable for a few seconds. He got upset.
Because when you're respected and honored by people, when somebody doesn't honor you, it hurts. If nobody ever honors you, it always hurts. So if somebody doesn't honor you, it doesn't make that much difference, right? You're just accustomed to the pain. Not being honored and respected, then somebody doesn't. One who's been honored, dishonored, is worse than death. So you got disturbed for only a few seconds. Some natural human emotion just arose. And he did a kind of, well, I won't say it's a stupid thing, because who am I to say something like that? But he did something that was totally out of his character. He happened to see a dead snake laying there. Well, there's no harm from a dead snake. And with his bow, he lifted up the dead snake and said, "Oh, you know, Rishis, I've come to give you a garland. Since you're not giving me any water, I'll give you a garland." And he put this dead snake over the Rishi's shoulder. And then he left. You know, if you put a live snake, poison snake, that would have been malicious. This was just something kind of foolish. And it's the only time he would ever do something like that, because he was somehow or other overcome by thirst. And because he was overcome by thirst, he became irritable. Just a moment of weakness. And he was misunderstood. Whether you're a king or whether you're just a little schoolgirl, this world is a place where people misunderstand you. And how interesting, a little child being orchestrated so. But some of the scriptures, a little child cursed him to die in 7 days because of this. That's a pretty serious thing. All of a sudden, he's cursed to die in 7 days. And curses used to work in those days. That's the nature of the world. It's especially like that in today's world. One moment of inattention could bring drastic results. We're driving in a car. It doesn't matter so much whether you have a Mercedes, a BMW, or a little Russian car, Lada's. You're going 70 miles an hour, and you're just talking to somebody, and you get into your talking, and you take your, for a moment, if you take your eyes are off the road, it could mean death for you and everybody. How many times does that happen? For devotees, it's usually falling asleep. Unfortunately, I probably personally know about a dozen devotees over the years who were either seriously injured or killed in car crashes due to a moment falling asleep. It's not like they only have to rest and then, you know, driving and then, you know, 6 hours later. It just takes a moment. All it takes. This is in our modern day. The forest and the highway. One moment of intentness. One moment.
moment of inattentiveness, off guard, people do something immoral, it destroys their careers and their whole life. It really is like that. Just walking. Do you know how dangerous walking is? You can walk across the street and not look right and left while children are playing. Won't you speak? Countries that have bonds pointed at practically every other country. Are you ready? Treasures of the soul. So this is an opportunity. He wasn't attached to the things. He was attached to the purpose of the things. So we can actually live blissfully in this world, with the things of this world, if we just don't see in terms of I and I, if we see in terms of Krishna. This body is made for Krishna. I'm going to take care of this body as much as I could because it's for Krishna. And the flowers in the forest, if they smell nice, I'm thinking, oh, how nice Krishna's making this fragrance. And I'm thinking of Krishna, it's clear. And if, you know, somebody, some, you know, human has done something in the forest, responded to nature's calls, and there's another fragrance that comes. Oh, this is helping me remember Krishna. So whether it's a good smell or a miserable smell, we remember Krishna. Yes. We have some skill, we have some thing. Instead of just using it for our own sensual enjoyments, we use it to serve. If we use it to serve, the thing is instrumental to our liberation. But if we use it for our own selfish purposes, the thing is an instrument for our perpetual bondage, perpetuating our bondage in our illusion. Srila Prabhupada quotes in this verse, in his purport, this is such a liberating understanding. We don't have to condemn the world. We just condemn illusion. But the world, we see it as Krishna's world. Whatever, all that you have, all that you can do, just do it as an offering to me. This concept of seva, unselfish service offered with devotion, can liberate us in every situation. Radha Desh is one of the most beautiful of all buildings. This temple room is incredible. Sometimes we take it for granted because we see it so much. But by Krishna's grace, I come here so rarely that I really appreciate what I have. Thank you. makes it so special. Because I've seen people's homes that are even more opulent and luxurious than this. But what makes it so nice is none of us is thinking, this is mine. We're all thinking, this is Krishna's. This is Radharani and Gopinath's. This is their place to enjoy. And we're all here to use it for their enjoyment. If we actually have this consciousness, there's nothing to be arrogant about. There's nothing to be envious about. You see, these symptoms of arrogance, envy, greed, they can only exist in darkness, in ignorance. They cannot exist in light. If we're conscious that my skills, my body, this wonderful temple, everything, the forest, the trees, the flowers, everything is here, is all Krishna's. And we're all here together to utilize everything for Krishna's happiness. Watering the root of the tree, every part of the tree is happy. If every part of the tree is recognizing that satisfaction of the root is our real self-interest, then there's no conflict. And even if there is conflict, it's sweet conflict. Because it's conflict for Krishna. Even competition among devotees is sweet and brings us closer. Even disagreements. Because there's no selfishness. But as soon as there's selfishness, as soon as there's ego, it creates envy and hatred and disunity. The problem is not even the disagreement, the problem is our motivations. So, the beauty of this place, when you think it's mine, this verse explains that's the seat of your suffering. But when you see the same thing as being Krishna's, that's the seat of eternal ecstasy. One person is looking at the sunset, they're thinking how beautiful. California, he would look at the sunset and just see Krishna. He would be in ecstasy. And another day, when it's a really, really stormy day, and there is no sunset, and the person who saw the sunset and was happy is no longer happy. When Prabhupada saw the stormy day, he would see that as Krishna too. When Prabhupada told us a story of World War II, the Japanese were bombing Calcutta. And the air raids were sounding sirens. Really horrible sounds. They're meant to disturb you. Just break you out of your complacency and run through your life. Yes? It's not, you know how we have these ringers on our telephone to have our favorite song. Well, when there's an air raid, they don't put like beautiful music. It's not like the air raid, they play Bach, some symphony. Everyone come to the bomb shelter. They could. No problem. Number one song, you play that. You just you have to get out of here. So, anyways, the air raids were blasting. People were frantic because they were actually bomb shopping. Prabhupada said he gave him not invitation, but he made it sound. Do you agree with that, Kate? Incredible lecture.
So the bottles are dropping from wood. And the air people were screaming. Children were screaming and people were running and Prabhupada was making puris. And people were using free hospital in those days. So people were
abai, you know, the bombing, the Japanese are bombing, come run to the country, they're all screaming, they're running, they're going down the stairs, they're running down the streets, they're crashing into each other, they're stepping on each other, they're trying to get in front of each other to get away from the bombs before they die, trying to protect their children, trying the last minute grabbing, you know, some gold ring or something that they're valuable that they can take with them because they may never see any of their property again. It's pretty emergency. I said, bye, come.
Papa said, you go, I am cooking for Krishna. Papa explained. He said, that everyone else was so afraid that I was thinking, Krishna has come in the form of these bombs. So he's making puris for him.
He was happy. He was transcendental.
The sound of the bombs, the fact that the bombs of the material platform were the same for Prabhupada as everyone else. But he was in this world and not out of this world. He understood the soul is beyond birth and death. If Krishna wants to take me in this bomb, it will be his embrace. If Krishna wants to keep me in this world, that will be his embrace. See, he wasn't cooking the words for himself. When we eat for Krishna, our eating, of course, we have to nourish our bodies. We may even actually like the taste of it. Sometimes devotees get kind of fanatical. And it's Maya if you like the taste of something. Of course, most devotees, the reason they become devotees is because they like the taste of it. And after they learn the philosophy, they get kind of confused whether they're supposed to like it or not. Sometimes people ask this question. Is it Maya to enjoy prasad? Depends on why you enjoy it. If you're enjoying just Krishna's mercy and you're in the mood of serving, all the folks to chant Hare Krishna be happy. Krishna likes what we're having, but he wants us to be happy for the right reason. Yogis on the stage, the sannyasis and swamis, they were speaking all very, very high, very complicated philosophies about renunciation and how everything is an illusion. There were thousands of people in the audience in a big park in Bombay, and everybody was like, swamis were talking about how everything is illusion. And Prabhupada got up and he told the devotee, he just said, Dukyata. And the devotee started dancing. And Prabhupada took puris and wrapped sugar in the puris and stirred it, and everyone was happy. Devotional life is to actually see
by seeing the inherent miseries in material creation. The reason why we're supposed to see that is so that we can actually be able to see the inherent beauty of everything in material existence. This is a very subtle, fine principle. Illusion is to see the beauty in things and want to enjoy it. And to see the ugliness in things and want to avoid it. Incomplete renunciation is to see the inherent ugliness in everything. Because everything is temporary. And if I try to enjoy it, I'll get attached to it, and it's going to be ripped away from us, and we're going to be ripped away from it or them, he or she. Is to see the inherent suffering in the perception of I am I. I am the enjoyer. I am the controller. I am the proprietor. And this is mine. And if it's not mine, I want it to be mine. That perception is the seed of all suffering. But if we're thinking everything is Krishna's, that Jivara Swarupura Krishna Nitya Das, I'm Krishna's servant, and everything is meant for that purpose, then we actually see the beauty. The beauty of the flower, the beauty of the sunset, the beauty of other living people. Even the beauty of the bombs. We actually see beauty because we see the opportunity to serve. So when we talk about this inherent suffering in the material existence, it's not about things. It's about the consciousness in which we're perceiving the thing. And that's what this beautiful chapter, The Forest of Enjoyment, is trying to teach us. Ram and Sita, they taught us by their example. They were living in the king and queen of Ayodhya. Well, they were meant to be the king and queen. They were the prince and princess. They were just about to be coronated as the prince regent, the next king. The most glorious day of their lives. And just the same morning that they were supposed to be coronated, you know, everybody was preparing and celebrating for this moment to come. And right there, point that was about to happen, they got exiled for 14 years into the forest. They were living in Chitrakoot, and Sita said to Ram, I'm more happy here than in Ayodhya. This is so nice. We look at our kingdom now, so we don't know anything. Everything is trees and everything is beautiful birds and servants, sages and rishis and yogis. So nice. So they were saying this was beautiful, beautiful. They were praising all the things around them. It was making them so happy. Why? Because Sita saw all of this is for Ram's worship. And Ram was saying all of this was to make Sita happy. So their happiness was in the in the purpose that they had for the things around them. Srila Prabhupada, one time I was living in a community and it was really austere. And I decided to leave. And the person asked, why are you leaving? And I said, because there's too much sense gratification. We're so shocked. I said, are you serious? He knew I was serious because I was like living kind of like that. So there was this little, in the middle of the winter when it was massive snow and freezing, a little hut where people would take cold baths. It's pretty austere.
in those days, I used to go out to a field where there was a hole in the ground with water, and I would break the ice with a rock. And with all the snow in the winter, I would take my bath there every morning, like 2 o'clock. So when I said I need it because there's too much sense gratification, I said, nobody cares about that. People have a lot of reasons for leaving, but not for that reason. Because compared to the way I was living in India, this really was sense gratification. So I took sense gratification. So I have to sleep in a house with 30 people on one floor, 150-year-old house. But still, there's a roof. And you serve popcorn at night. So you want to be it. But the temptation is there to eat the popcorn. First, I didn't have that temptation. Quoted Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada said, if you're living play with little children. Just like story of Shamsundar Prabhu and Malati Devi. They had their little child Saraswati. They gave Saraswati a little deed of Krishna. And Prabhupada hid the deity behind him. And she was,
where is Krishna? She's crying, where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? She was crying. Prabhupada, what did you give her to?
And their mother asked, where, do you know where Krishna is? She would say, where is Krishna? She said, do you know where it is? And the little Saraswati said, I know where it is. Prabhupada has Krishna.
She was crying and begging Prabhupada to give her Krishna.
So then Prabhupada gave her Krishna. So he's playing with children because the other people are playing with children too. But he was seeing them as Krishna's children. And he's seeing them. And you know, there's little bodies made of earth, water, fire, air, ether, and all that stuff that's temporary.
Yeah.
Temporary little child's bodies. It's Krishna's body. And seeing how to somehow or other inspire her to get more attached to Krishna. So the devotees can be supremely nice, supremely friendly, if it helps people to become attached to something in connection to Krishna. The Prabhupada has the ability to create so much beautiful art. It's a canvas. It's all temporary, mundane stuff. Yes. Prabhupada had these devotees working hours and hours, days and days, years and years. The same paint, the same canvas, and any other artist. But they were seeing it all as Krishna's energy to reveal Krishna. Person could use the same paint and canvas for pornography and to paint a beautiful picture of Krishna's lila. Same chemicals from the same bottle. Yes? It's a material thing, but there's a total difference. One liberates us. One perpetuates bondage. So this is how Srila Prabhupada taught us to see the world. To see the inherent beauty of the world. And that all comes when we simply have the spirit of seva, of self-respect. And we'll end by just talking a little about this particular painting. Critical painting. You see what's happening there? You all know the story better than me because you're looking at it and staking every day. Should I tell anybody?
No.
And Krishna's with the gopis. And they're playing. Whether this is the story, I think it is. But Yashoda Lai would cook so many nice preparations for Krishna, and he would share them with all his friends. And sometimes his friends, their parents, would cook so many preparations. Whenever they liked something, they would want to share it with the others. So some of the gopas were saying, Krishna, Krishna, this is very, very nice. We want to give it to you. And Krishna says, yes, yes, please. And they said, please, we want to make it a surprise for you. Close your eyes. They open your mouth. Krishna closed his eyes and opened his mouth. He was expecting a lager. And they took a flower it put a flower in its mouth.
Now, flowers don't usually taste so good. Yes? Maybe you need flowers. He put a flower in his mouth. And he was like, and then he made a strange face. His expression. And everyone started laughing. And then Krishna started laughing. So nice. So you see, they were seeing a flower. One person sees a flower, an artist with his own, and they paint a painting about this flower. Another person who's in love will think, let me give this flower to my beloved and it should be very nice to me. Another person who's, you know, botanist will look at the flower and think the Latin name for this flower is, and people start calculating it. And a devotee will see the flower and think, oh, to see Krishna has made this flower out of a little seed of the offering to Krishna. Here, the nature of art is understanding everything as a way of reciprocating with Krishna's love.
That is mentioned in our Vedic scripture in this age of, in this modern age.
How to believe mythology in our scriptures in this modern age. By associating with people who believe. Everything that we believe, everything that we believe, if we go deep into it, is unbelievable. Yes. We just become so dull that we think unbelievable things to be so ordinary. It's like this room. There may be 100 devotees. So it's quite believable. There's Mataji is in here, Prabhu is here, child. It's quite unbelievable. He's not crying. He's been here for so long. It really is quite unbelievable. Every single person in this room, some years ago, they were a little tiny microscopic seed in the womb of the mother. Yes? Before that, they were the father. And somehow this little microscopic, little slimy thing, I don't know, it just kind of was transferred into the mother, and it got emulsified, and chemicals started coming together, and then it became a little seed. Can't even see it with your eyes. And it's just growing. Such growing. Little fingers and brains and livers and kidneys and pancreases and ears and nose and tongue. Such growing. And it's born. And a little child. Child is born out of a little seed. Parents don't know what's happening. They don't know what's happening. It's not like they have some engineering plan, different phases. And how is it all species? They have very common, say, DNA and genetic codes and all that stuff. It's unbelievable. It's easy to explain how it happens, why it happens, who's making it happen. So if two ants were talking together, by like, you know what their intent is. What ants going on? They're having a conversation, and they're talking about humans and what humans do. Right? There was a class among Srimad Bhagavatam class among ants. Suddenly, one ant in the corner, and this little antennas would say, how in this modern age are we supposed to believe this mythology that humans can do all these things? What do you say? Well, best with ants. Isn't the sun unbelievable? The sun planet. We see it every day. We expect it to be something ordinary. It's millions of times bigger than this earth. It's millions of miles away. And how long has the sun been up there burning? Billions of years. Now, fire needs fuel, correct? You have to give gas or petrol or wood or coal or something to keep fire going. And if you don't, it burns out. Who's giving fuel to the sun? And yet the sun's been burning for billions of years and it's getting smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. And it's so hot, even though it's millions of miles away from the Earth's planet, it's keeping us warm. And if we were a little closer, we would all die of being burned to death. And if we were a little further, we'd die of cold. Yes? And since time goes on, the Earth is just the right amount of space from the sun, from the life we know to exist. And the sun just keeps burning and giving light and giving sunshine. It's inconceivable, isn't it? It's mythology! So the creator of all this, the mastermind of all creation, that Supreme Lord wants to come eat a flower. What's such an impossible mythology about that? If he can create the sun and create the moon and create all the planets and create the technology of all life, making a seed into a brilliant person, he wants to lift over down hill with a little finger of his left hand. So the greatest, most self-realized rishis who are saying the truth, explaining who is this God behind everything? And what can he do? He has a chinja shakti, inconceivable potence. So what's unbelievable to us is that people won't believe it. That's unbelievable. Can I answer your question?
Yes.
Yeah. I have another question.
It's about the last night's, last evening's your lecture that you mentioned. I don't know what happened to Devakir. After Krishna is transferred to Nanda Maharaj's place, we know everything. We know something, but we don't know what happened to Devaki and Vasudeva when Krishna is transferred.
Describes in Srimad Bhagavatam. Huh? Yogamaya came back and chastised Kamsa. She was a little baby girl.
When Kamsa wanted to kill her, she went in the sky and she started chastising
Kamsa. You are such a fool.
The child who was meant to kill you was born somewhere else. Why are you doing this to your sister?
So he realized destiny was more powerful than himself.
So he fell at the feet of Devaki and Vasudeva and begged forgiveness. And they forgave him. And then he let them go free. But then due to bad association,
in our Muni's systems,
after he begged forgiveness and they forgave him for all that he did to them, he imprisoned them again because
he became even more afraid. He got sobered up when Yogamaya, and then he got again intoxicated by that association. And he put them back in prison. And they lived like that until about 12 years later when Krishna came to Mathura and liberated Kamsa. And Vasudeva were reunited with Krishna, and then he stayed with them in Mathura and Dwarka for the next 112 years. Something around that time.
Yes. Why your name is Adanatsuna?
Hmm?
Do you know why? Yes, so your master give you this name, Radhanatsuna.
Do I know why Srila Prabhupada gave me the name Radhanatsuna? Because he is unbelievably, inconceivably, causelessly mercy to the most fallen of all his own. That's the only explanation.
Is there any questions from the lady's side? Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj. Maharaj, you have mentioned that Parikshit Maharaj was not attached to things. He was attached to the purpose of the thing. Mm-hmm. So, is my understanding right that the purpose of the thing was to serve Krishna? Or?
Your understanding is so right. That's all?